We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to hear.
Fourth quarter of the program begins right now, finishing strong, the 20th hour of the week. It does not bother us one bit.
No.
Kevin Harlan coming along here in a little bit. Time now for our Need to Know. It's brought to you by our friends at Big O Tires. Did you know that Big O Tires can pick you up and take you home? That's right. Big O Tires, the brand you trust. They can even take you on into work or take you on to work. Whether you need the shuttle service, they got you covered. Plus, get up to $100 in rebates on select sets of Goodyears, Pirelli, and Bridgestone tires. And plus, they're more than just tires. They service brakes, battery, shock struts, and a whole lot more every time. You get a multi-point vehicle inspection with every service, so take advantage of it right now. Plus, great financing, including 12 months, no interest for qualified purchases, 13 locations around the metro. Book your appointment online right now at BigOTires.com. We said we'd start with Brett Beach. We will start with Brett Beach. Let's begin with the wide receiver class. Sam McDowell asked Beach about the depth of the wideout class.
I think the draft in general has some positional depth, although it is funny when we're looking at the numbers and the general consensus is this is a deep O-line class or this is a deep D-line class or what have you. It's not necessarily true for us, I think, sometimes, because, like, for the tackle position, I think once you get past, like, pick 35 or 40, most of those guys are gone. So if you're picking in the top 10, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking in the top 15, it's a great offensive line class. If you're picking 32 and 64, you got a shot maybe here or there. So I think that goes into, you know, the additional work we put in and putting a strategy together and what guys – might be worth a move, depending on how it all plays out and, you know, what other positions are going to provide top end value if say, an O lineman or receiver isn't there. And, you know, do you go corner? Do you go defensive line? I think that there are some interesting pockets there. So I think the good thing is, like every year, there's a lot of good players, and it's just a matter of working on our board, our system, given the picks we have and the, you know, the potential moves we can make.
Do you go corner or D-line? I throw some love back to, yeah. Who was it? Was it Andrew earlier? I think it was Andrew. Was it Rodney? I think it was Andrew who mentioned corner. I had not picked up on the corner part right there. So, no. Andrew, nice job listening on that one, because I only heard D-line. And he did mention corner in there.
Yep.
So I still don't think it'll be corner.
He wasn't asked about it. He just threw it out there.
Yeah, I still don't think it'll be corner, but he talked about the tackles, and the depth looks pretty good when you're up high.
Yeah, 32 and 64.
So someone's going to have to slide, or they're going to have to jump up to get the offensive tackle. Let's drill a little bit deeper on the wideout class.
I think it's one of the deeper classes. The good thing about the wide receiver position, this is typically every year, is they provide depth really 1 through 5, and there's always – you know, pockets of players. I think there's a large group of receivers in the first 50 picks, I think, that we have great grades on. And then I think there's another pocket right behind that. I think that is a positive. I think, you know, corner, there's some depth, you know, middle to later on in the draft. O-lineman, as I mentioned in the opener, it's really good early. And so there'll be a late run on those guys, but it tails off a little bit. I think it's a better defensive line class than we've seen in the past. I think there's some good mid-round depth there. You know, linebacker, running back's probably a little lighter than years past. So I think O-line, receivers, corners are good hot spots throughout the draft, and that's a good thing because we can use one of each of those.
O-line, receivers, corners. You mentioned the corners again there. D-line, one of the deeper pockets. I think that's, you know, they signed everybody back, but you don't necessarily have to keep all those guys.
Right.
A couple of them could be cut in camp if you find a better guy. So I'll add corner into the mix. I think it's a premium position that they're willing to take. I do wonder a little bit, is that Sale's job?
Maybe.
Does he know that maybe some people are taking corners and
so much.
So let's sell that we're going corner.
Yeah, there was so much talk about tackle wide receiver. They throws corner out there. Maybe. Some little subterfuge there.
How about this? We thought this was interesting. Hadn't really heard it. He talked about NIL. We know that's happening in college. He said the NIL has had an impact on the later rounds of the draft.
Typically, when you're working through the fourth, fifth, sixth round, there's always interesting prospects and small school guys. But I think it's what you're starting to see is these fourth, fifth, sixth round prospects are a little older because they're staying. And some of these underclassmen that get third, fourth round grades, they have the opportunity to stay in school. And so I don't know if these drafts, and this will be a trend where they won't be as deep as they used to be. So, I mean, if you're a junior and you have a third or fourth round grade and you have an opportunity to stay in school and make money, you're going to go back, potentially stay in school. And so what happens is I think the drop off from rounds three, the cutoff line, I think the availability of young guys with potential that came out early, maybe they shouldn't, they would have stayed, they would have been a first or second round pick. Well, those guys are staying now. So I think the drop-off numbers are a little bit more extreme this year, and the players are a little bit older. So we have to work a little bit harder to find some young guys with upside that we really like. That, to me, I found challenging. And when we were going through the board, it was one of the things that I kind of like just instinctively thought. And then when I checked with our guys, they were like, yeah, these guys are a lot older.
The single most illuminating thing that came out of that Zoom today, I think, was that. The first time I went, whoa, I had not thought about that. But it makes a lot of sense when you do.
It does. That, you know, they're going to stay in like, hey, I can get paid a pretty good check here. And so they're – but is this the first year we're feeling it really then? Okay, so the other guys are already ready to jump. You know, we're going to feel it even more moving forward. Yeah. Or is it, okay, there was this backwash in year one – so now it's thicker here because this is the first year we're getting the class, and then it should level out as we get some younger guys coming in. I think it'll be interesting to kind of watch. Yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of watch where this goes from here.
Yeah.
His wording toward the end there said it's forced them to work harder to find guys more in the age range they're looking for. Do you think it's also going to force him to get out of his comfort zone and take guys older than he would have otherwise?
You think you're sacrificing it at some point, or you're moving around, you're changing your plan at some point. Why only change it one direction? Maybe change it another way as well. Interesting. We'll get an indication based on what they draft in the next. You know.
No, but we'll see.
10 days.
How's that
now.
Sound for you?
Yeah.
10 days. How you like
now,
that one?
An idea.
Let's talk about Kadarius Toney. Why wouldn't we?
Day to day is what it is.
Yeah. Adam Teicher asked Brett Veach what he expects from Kadarius Toney this coming season.
Kadarius has obviously had a long history of injury issues, but I mean, he is probably our most talented wideout. Now, again, it doesn't do anyone any good unless you stay healthy. But I mean, the kid has always worked hard here for us. And, you know, I know he's been down there with Pat, and I think it's just a matter of him staying healthy. And I think if he can do that, he can really do a lot of great things in this offense. And, you know, that's one of the things that there was a lot of speculation about KT, but I don't think that, you know, we ever stopped believing in him. And I think people around the building like him, and you know, it's the injury bug, and hopefully he gets some luck on his side and he can stay healthy and be the player that he was in Florida and the player that we've seen in spurts here.
It'd be nice if we're hoping that everything that's ever happened to him stops happening.
Well, I don't see it as the injury bug.
No,
his most impactful play as a Chief did not require him to catch a pass.
Yeah, I think it's, you know.
And the most important pass he caught,
catch the ball,
was a pass that he would have been vilified for history had he not caught that little corn dog catch 2 years ago.
Yeah. I have a hard time getting my arms around that one.
If you played that clip and you didn't know who it was about and there was no name, you'd never guess it was about Kadarius Toney.
Right. I agree. College football news, they're adding helmet communication for FBS games, two-minute timeouts at the end of each half, and other changes were approved this week by the NCAA's Playing Rules Oversight Panel. Games featuring FBS teams will give each team the option of using coach-to-player communications through the helmet of one player on the field designated with a green dot. I don't know where they got that idea. On the midline of his helmet, several teams used helmet communications during the most recent bowl season, but it will now be an option for every game. Coach-to-player communications will be shut off 15 seconds left on the play clock or when the ball is snapped, whichever comes first.
I like it.
Yeah.
Get rid of those stupid signs.
Yeah, well.
Drop the banner so people in front can see.
So now everybody can stop sweating Jim Harbaugh.
Welcome back. You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB as we continue to cruise through the 5 o'clock hour. Always better when we get a chance to talk to the great Kevin Harlan, the voice of America, CBS, TNT, Western One. Do I judge this right? Did you get a couple of days off or no?
I did get a couple of days off. Yeah, good to be out with you, Seren. Good to hear your voice. No, we did New Orleans Lakers on, what day was that? Was that
Tuesday?
Monday or Tuesday. And then we don't work again until Monday. We have Lakers in Denver on Monday. So, yeah, we've had some time to kind of catch our breath, which is very nice. A weekend where I don't have to get on a plane, which is great. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And what do you think? Are you, now we've had a couple of editions of it, are you a fan of the play-in games?
Yeah, I think I am. The best part of it is the ratings have been incredible for both TNT and for ESPN on the first two nights. The thing that I think it does more than anything else, as we all know, it was made to make the end of the season more competitive for the teams that were right on the fringe and include more that would have a chance late in the year. And if you qualified within a certain grouping, teams 7 through 10 in each conference, it would not guarantee a slot in the playoffs. It would give you a better chance at the playoffs in a one-and-done type of situation. So, I think it is. Two-thirds of the season is spent just trying to get to that last third, which you want to be healthy, you want to be playing the best, and you want to be making sure that you have got everything buttoned down as you go to that home stretch. And the last third of the season is always, I think, great. It's really from the All-Star game on. And then you've got 20 of the 30 teams that are still alive in some form or fashion. And as you end the season and have 20 teams of the 30 still in there punching away, I think that you know, makes for better competition, better games. Guys are wanting to play more as you go along, and as opposed to maybe taking an injury and sitting on the side, the better players will play longer and more. And that's always good for the game. So, yeah, I think overall the competition has improved considerably, and I'm glad they've done this.
And, of course, we're just minutes away from the Bulls and Heat playing in the elimination game for the final spot. Then after that, the Kings and Pelicans tonight. I hear people complain about how much money guys make. We figured it up. 260-some-odd million of guaranteed money is going to be paid, whether they play again or not, whether they perform or not, to Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid, two guys. Butler playing with a sprained, which is a partial tear of the MCL for three quarters. Embiid coming back early from a knee injury. Like, let's not question the want-to of the players when I see those two guys give everything that they've got on injuries in this. Like, these guys care. At least maybe not every guy, but those two guys care.
I would agree. They're two warriors. Both of them are. And Butler, who I had a chance to watch a lot of last year in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Boston Celtics, was absolutely magnificent in that series. He's had another great season. And to gut it out like he did the other night, I thought, you know, showed all the, you know, gumption, whatever you want to call it, you know, just the toughness that resides in most of these players. The competition is too strong. And, you know, aside from the Embiids and the Butlers and the Antetokounmpos of the NBA, the Jokic's, the superstar type players, those last three, four slots on an NBA team are so coveted. and the competition to make him is incredible. Like I said before, the last third of the season, you see teams tightening the screws and really getting into, you know, playoff position, getting involved in the playoffs, even if they're in the play-in. There's just a lot involved, and I think it's made for a better game. I still think 82 games is too many. I don't know if that's ever going to be, you know, reeled back a little bit. I think 68 feels like about the right number. It would take all the back-to-back games out of it, which I think is good for a variety of reasons. I would love there to be more practice during the season. There's a lot of practice in the NFL between games. There's very little of it except for batting practice for Major League Baseball. I think a sport is better when they've had time for practicing and really settling into the opponent. When they come so fast, you're just out there going through the motions. It can be difficult, and it can be costly. And I think that the sport is better with fewer games. Football has proven that. Of course, it's far more physical and far more players. But I think the other sports, if they would dial back a little bit, could find maybe healthier players, better quality play, more fan interest, because the less you have of something, the more you want it. And that's a good thing, you know, for the sports to have their fans wanting more and more. You can't get enough NFL coverage for an 18 or 17 game schedule and a 19 week season. I mean, it's amazing just what these fans will want. They're never quenched, are they? I mean, they constantly, and the draft is a perfectly positioned, you know, kind of off season event that they've made bigger than life. It's 3 days and you're getting ready for it yourself. And a lot of it's going to be on this station coming up next week. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch that. But I just think the less of a season you have, it almost seems to drive the fan wanting more and more. And I like I said, I think that's a good thing, clearly.
Would it, because when we get to the playoffs, chalk largely wins, right? Like the favorite usually wins. Now it's a best of seven. It's not a one game. They don't win every game, right? They don't go 4-0, 4-0, 4-0 all the way to a title. But if you did that, if you took away the back-to-backs, would it take away some of the upsets?
It might. I think that, you know, the back-to-back is just because you're trying to put the seeds out there. They've lengthened, you know, the literal calendar dates of the season. They've moved the start up more, and they've increased the back end a little bit, and they've done that so that they can put more games and more dates, but less, you know, compacted together. We used to have, back in the day in the NBA, there were a lot of times you'd play three games in a row in three different cities. And that became very, very difficult, and wisely the league got away from that. I think they tried to limit the back-to-back games to 13, 14 different sequences a season. And I think that has helped. It used to be well over 20 before. Now they've cut back on that. I think it's helped with the injury component. And they've also, the league has put for some of the awards like MVP and All-NBA and Defensive Player of the Year and some of the awards that are known to a lot of people and all the awards totally. You've got to play a minimum of 65 games. So and there are a lot of incentives built in these players' contracts for awards won and teams, you know, all-star teams made. So there's a lot involved here with trying to tweak as they go along. The in-season tournament has been a part of that too. But the upset is always something that I think is going to be apparent in the NBA because of, you know, the quality of play, the type of player. The best want to play here. It pays the most of any league in the world. The best in the world want to play in this league. And so there's never a shortage of talented players. I mean, some of these players, some of the great players we knew in the Big 12 that we followed for years and years and then go on and don't make an NBA team and go to the G League and kind of stammer around and maybe they get their shot, maybe they don't. But it just goes to show you a great player in a conference, your player of the year, for instance, sometimes won't even make an NBA team. That's how good the NBA is. And so keeping it at that level, I think, is paramount. The league is always about that. But the upset clearly is something that is fun. In the old playoffs scenario, in the first round, it used to be a best of five. Now, I thought there was something pretty attractive about that because it was fewer games and those upsets sometimes prevailed more than the favored team. But you want the best teams at the end, and seven games is clearly enough time to figure out who that team is and to have literally the best team win. And so I think that scenario is here to stay and won't go.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan here on the program. Is there a first-round series? We don't know who the 1-8s are going to be, right? That hasn't been determined. We'll know that later tonight. But is there a series that jumps out at you? Knicks, Sixers, Bucks, Pacers, Cavs, Magic, Lakers, Nuggets, T-Wolves, Suns, Clippers, Mavericks. Is there one of those that jumps out at you that you think is going to be the meatiest?
I think the ones that will really appeal the most to fans will be the Timberwolves and the Suns. Timberwolves were one of the best teams in the league this year, and they finished, I think, number three and not far out of the number one slot. And they're taking on, you know, Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns. I think that could be a terrific series. And they beat the Timberwolves, I think, three games of the three they played. So they were 3-0 against the Timberwolves. And they won final day of the season up in Minneapolis. So I think that could really be a terrific season. The Suns, if you've not been following it, with Durant and with Booker and with Bradley Beal, kind of a slow start to the season. Booker was injured early on. They picked up some steam. They made some headway, and they got into the top six. They were number six in the Western Conference, which was just an incredibly competitive conference this year. And the Timberwolves finished number three. So that's going to be, I think, as good as the Dallas Clippers series. If the Clippers are healthy, and I see that the older Hall of Famers to be, the Paul Georges and the James Hardens, are doing everything they can, Kawhi Leonard, to get their health for that series. And if they're healthy, that could be a dynamite series too. No team has been hotter to end the NBA season than Dallas, with Doncic and with Kyrie Irving. So that certainly is a team to watch, and kind of my dark horse, actually. The Mavericks made a midseason trade. They got two players. Everybody then, when those two players join their team, fit in their roles perfectly. And from that point on, they have taken off and just they've been steamrolling teams and playing at the very top of their game. And so Dallas is probably the team I would watch in the West. The Eastern series, Saran, none in the first round really interest me. Indiana may give Milwaukee some trouble. Milwaukee has really just had kind of a weird season. They brought in Lillard. They won the 49 games, but they were not the dominant team that people predicted they would be. And the Pacers, what I think, have a chance at an upset in that series.
Well, because two guys are used to playing with the ball. Right. And you got to figure that out. And I'm amazed. I listen to some of the talking heads and look, and in some ways I understand doing a show every day, being that I do one for 4 hours every day. I understand the need to go find compelling topics, but is this it? Is Lillard gone if they don't advance? Like you bring these two together and you pay a big price to go get Dame Lillard. Usually it takes another offseason to try to put the glue pieces together. If you make a move for Dame Lillard, this is at least a two-year trial, isn't it?
Well, I think that's a pretty good – and we've got some evidence in Dallas when they got Kyrie Irving at the middle of last year, and it really took a full year, I mean a calendar year, and from February to February, the trade was made in February of 23, and not until February of this year, 24, have we really seen the team turn the corner. They made the trade, as you said, to get some pieces around those two that would make sense in every scenario, whether they were on the floor together or on the floor alone. And that has made all the difference for the Dallas Mavericks. And I think that they would say the same to Milwaukee, as you point out, that you had to make the move. And it was such a jarring move. It was like a house being basically finished, but you had to do a couple more things to it to make it complete. And that may be what this offseason is for the Bucks if they choose to continue down this road and not cut their losses and move in another direction. But I think they need a couple other pieces around those two to make them work. And what they are, I don't know. And it took Dallas literally a full year to get the two players they needed to make it work down with the Mavericks. So I think there's a lot to what you say, and the results in Dallas have been spectacular, and the early returns in Milwaukee have just kind of been eh. Now, Lillard has been there the full season. He has been there the full year. They couldn't do anything at the trade deadline, but they may need, as you say, another offseason just to make this thing go. But when you bring in big players like that, important superstar-like players, and try to connect them to others, there is a time of trying to figure out how this is going to work and getting some, you know, some real information on paper so that you can move, you know, in the right direction with the next move that you make. And that may be where Milwaukee is right now, trying to figure out how they're going to make this, how they're going to salvage this Antetokounmpo and Dame Lillard combination in Milwaukee. And so far, like I said, the results have been kind of circumstantial. It has not worked out the way they thought it would.
We're talking to Kevin Harlan here on the program. You mentioned the Clippers and their kind of dream team that they tried to build. The Suns have tried to put one together as well. If those teams don't go places, like if we get a Thunder T-Wolves Western Conference Finals, and I don't think we will because I think the Nuggets are going to get there, but if we did, would teams rethink the let's grab every old, you know, aging superstar we can get and put them together? Would there be kind of a backlash towards, hey, look at these two teams that, you know, just took their lumps and kept drafting and drafted well and built a team that grew up together? Would we see a shift?
You know, it's easy, I think, sometimes to go out and sign that big-name player. And it takes incredible patience by the entire organization to sit back and meticulously build through the draft and through acquisitions and do it maybe with younger players and hoping they flourish. The problem is that the component of waiting and patience by fans is pretty limited. A coach knows that he's on the clock the moment he's hired. And if they're not showing results in 2, 3, 4 years, that guy's gone. And maybe he should be. But it seems like the teams that have drafted, and Oklahoma City is a great example of it, because they at one time had 3 MVPs on their team. They had Harden, they had Russell Westbrook, and of course they had Kevin Durant. And all 3 are, of course, now gone. And they basically said, we're going to accumulate draft choices. We're going to get guys that fit our philosophy. We're going to get a coach that does not have to look over his shoulder. They got their G League coach, who, by the way, just won the Coach of the Year in the league, Daigneault. And we're going to be incredibly patient. We're going to be shrewd with our moves. We're going to try to maybe step out and be an outlier, perhaps, from that frame of thinking and get a rising young star. If we can build around it, maybe it didn't shake Gilgeous Alexander from the Clippers. So they've done it the right way, and their fan base stayed incredibly loyal, but there were some lean years, and they were not able to get the kind of player they want. And it's only 50-50 that the player that you draft very high is even going to pan out. I mean, there's no guarantee. And the easy way for an organization to bypass that uncertainty is to go out and sign a big free agent. Because he's got, you know, some sample that you can go out there and take a look at what he's done. He's got a resume put together at the NBA level. And so what you're getting and paying for more times than not is going to fulfill what you need. But when you get these kids out of college from overseas, wherever you get them, you got to develop them. And you got to hope that they are going to achieve the heights that you want. And that is a gamble. And some organizations will make it. Some won't. And the ones that are, you know, the Chiefs are a great example of drafting, developing, and playing these guys. And I think that's worked out pretty good. It just kind of depends the frame of reference front offices have, GMs have, in going down that road. Because you've got to have patience. You've got to have great coaches. And you've got to make the right selection. I mean, you've got to, if you're going to make, say, 5 picks, you've got to nail 2 of them. You've got to hit on 2 of them at the NBA level. Over a course of 5 years, you've got to hit on 2 of them, and they've got to be virtual superstars and day one starters. If not, you're going to continue to flounder, and it's easy to say, well, let's just hand the bag to so-and-so and get him in here. It'll drive up ticket interest, and our fans will be back engaged with us and everything else. It's you go one of 2 ways, and it's what they've done in Oklahoma City has been textbook, and they're the number one. They're the youngest number one seed in the history of the NBA playoffs. Youngest team to ever make the number one seed going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I love what they did. And listen, I think people who have listened to the show know I said I love what they're doing. I think it's great. I think it's what you have to do at a small market, but I'm not so sure that it's not what you should do in a big market, and then you just have the ability to supplement with those free agents because they'll come sign with you, right?
We saw that like in Philadelphia, right? The process in Philadelphia. They basically did all of that. They did that in Philadelphia. And, you know, when Simmons was healthy, he was an all-star. They got Joel Embiid. He was great. They drafted other kids that were very good, but they changed coaches. They changed GMs. And somewhere along the line, they lost their way. You know, injuries play a role in this, too. And both Embiid and Simmons got injured. And so that big, project, they called it the process, paid off in one regard because Embiid is one of the great centers in the league. But Simmons has been injured, so they're left at the one. And they did not get as many free agents signing there as they thought. They got a couple, and they were pretty good, but there were not maybe as many as they thought. So to your point, bigger markets have tried it, and to varying degrees of success. It is a crapshoot, and it's a 50-50 thing every time. And a lot of people say it's 50-50 when you sign a big-time free agent, too, and I would agree. It's when you get lightning in a bottle, man, you got to enjoy it and take it. One more example, it took, I think, Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert basically a full season playing together to figure out how they were going to coexist. And this year, they were number one in the Western Conference most of the season. They were the most dominant team, and they played the best. They finished number three, but just literally percentage points out of first and had a terrific year. And are certainly a threat in the playoffs.
All right. When we talk next, we're talking to the great Kevin Harlan here in the program. We will have had the first round of the NFL playoffs. They're picking at 32, whether they trade up a little. I don't think anybody thinks they're going up to number five. But if they trade up a little, trade back a little, pick at 32, wherever it is, Kevin Harlan looks at the Kansas City Chiefs and thinks it would be great if they got what position?
Well, I think it'd be great in the draft if they would trade down. I think they've got so many good players, and their record would indicate that. The postseason results would indicate that. I think that when teams get to this level, now you're looking to sustain it. You're looking to continue it. And the way they draft in the lower rounds and find guys, I would think that they could find everything that they would need if they would trade down, get multiple picks, whether there's an extra pick or two for this year or they add it on to next year. I think now they're kind of in the sustainability phase. They've got the quarterback. You've got some incredibly talented players on defense. You can find receiver, running back. You can find these players second, third, fourth round. And I think now finding more good players to keep this going, now that you've drafted your marquee players, the Joneses and the Mahomes, and they're performing for you, I think trading down. I mean, that's just one man's opinion, but I think now they're in the sustainability factor, playing a major role as opposed to trying to find that one home run guy. I think you just want to continue to build the strength of your team, and I think they're smart enough that they're going to figure out a way, whether they stick at 32 or they trade down and get more picks. They'll figure out a way to do it. We trusted them with the Jones and Snead free agency signing conversations back in February, and they got Jones. They felt that. They feel they're going to make sure that they fill that gap at that other corner with what they've got on the roster. And if they don't, they're going to get some guys in this draft or the next one, or maybe even get another player who gets let go to melt in to a terrific defense. They'll figure it out, I'm sure.
I agree with you pretty much 95% of the time. I always like more picks. I always like more lottery tickets, which is what, you know, you mentioned the draft. It's not a certainty. And so the only caveat I would say is if you can find a tackle that you have to know wherever you're going to go get him. And it's hard to believe that at 24, if you move up from 32 to 24, you're going to absolutely know this is a left tackle. But if Juwan Taylor were Mitchell Schwartz, I'd say, okay, you don't need to do anything. But I think you want one of those tackles to be able to leave on an island and say, he's got his side. And I don't think they have that right now. And they won without
it. I would agree.
You don't have to have it. But, man, if you can have that, that's worth the stretch. That's the one thing that I would kind of point to that, hey, maybe this gets it done.
Can't argue there. That sounded – if there is that guy that exists.
Yeah.
And, again, how many times have we seen tackles drafted, just like quarterbacks, tackles drafted high, and they don't do anything? And they may play 10 years, but they're never starting, going from team to team, usually a backup. They're going to play 5 games a season, and they're going to get hurt, and they're going to go jump to another team. And so you – I mean, listen, that's what it is with every draft choice. But you just don't know. Now, Veach is the kind of guy that when I think he's onto something, and we've seen this happen with him before, and you don't need a lot of evidence to show what he's done with that kind of feel, that could easily happen. And they could package something together, too, if they really felt strongly about a guy that is truly the one missing piece. But when you've won a couple Super Bowls in a row, there aren't many missing pieces, right? I mean, they lost the corner. And we get that. And by the way, his Super Bowl was not all that great. All that being said, he was a terrific player. And replacing him is going to be one of the top things they're going to have to do clearly in this offseason with the OTAs and certainly in camp opening up in a couple months.
Let's get to our final four here with Kevin Harlan. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get care from the experts, the Royals Trust, to make the right call. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/royals. I will start you with this, Kevin. The Lakers with LeBron James will ever make just the NBA Finals again. Yes or no?
Well, I hate to bet against them, but I'm going to say no. I think the other teams in the West are just too hard to get by. So I will say, and I hate to say that because I just saw him the other night, and again, he was spectacular. He is doing something that no player at his age has ever done. I don't know if anybody's done in any sport, golf aside. I don't think anybody has ever played at this level. Brady clearly is in that conversation. What he's doing, he turned 39 in December. In the NBA, no one has ever done it. Pro basketball, no one has ever done it. But I to answer the question, with the Lakers, the way they are now, they're good. They're really good. I just don't think they can win a championship.
All right. The Warriors with Steph Curry ever make it back to the finals?
No. With Curry, yeah. I think they're going to dismantle that team. I think this run is over, and they're going to have to make some major moves. But Curry, I think, is going to be the remaining part that will stick around. And he plays in a way, and they can design the offense in a way where just his shooting will be the one thing that will make him so deadly. He's got great playmaking skills. He can play defense on occasion, but it's his playmaking and his shooting clearly that have earned him a spot in the Hall of Fame. I think he's 36, 35. I think he can go another 2 or 3 years of the way he plays, the way he takes care of himself. Can they refurbish that roster in 2 years to make another run? I think it's going to be very difficult to do. Now, if they trade him, which I don't think they'll do, or if he leaves to go to another team, that's a whole other story.
Right.
But Curry is a Warrior. I think that's going to be very hard to do, and I'd say no.
Okay, the MVP this year should be?
Well, I'm going to say Jokic. We've never seen a center that can do everything the way he does. We've had great scorers. We've had incredible rebounders. We've had great shot blockers. But we've never had the playmaking with those other elements at that position before. There have been guys that have been like it, but not the numbers and the win shares and all the things that he does that make him so special. And he's a defending champion. So Jokic is going to be right there. There are a lot of guys in that conversation, Doncic being one of them. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, though, probably is going to be his toughest competition. And I'm really 50-50 on this one. So I'm going to, if I can with you, I'm going to split it between Shai Gilgeous-Alexander of Oklahoma City and Jokic. I know that's bad, but I think they're so close. And Shai has had an incredible season. And the team's number one. And they're young. That's That's doing a lot for that kid to carry. And they're good all the way around, but you have to have a star. He is clearly their star.
I'm a fan of both, so I will let you have it. So that's fine.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, you bet. NBA Finals, who beats who? What are you feeling right now?
I think it's Boston-Denver. I think Boston is too strong with any team in the East. And if they play the way they played this season, and if Porzingis has been what he has been in the regular season, Boston is the team out of the East. And I'm going to still go with Denver. I just think they've got the corporate knowledge. They may have the MVP. They've got a defending title that they're carrying, and they don't feel any pressure at all. They really don't. And they're young enough where they got a couple more years with the same group ahead of them. They got the right coach. I'll pick Denver and Boston in the finals.
And and who's the winner?
I'm going to go with Boston just because I think everything is aligning for them perfectly. And I think they're even better than they were last year, and they were terrific last year. But Porzingis, when he's playing the right way, makes them a special team with literally and a great bench, one of the best benches, if not the single best bench in the NBA, where three of those guys could start on any team in the league. So I'm going to go Boston.
Yep, that's what I got as well. Kevin, you got it right. Good. You aced it. You aced the whole Final Four.
Oh, I feel better. I feel better about myself. I feel so much better about my pick. And I feel even better being your friend on this show every Friday night.
We're better for it. Kevin, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Wonderful, sir. And take care. Bye-bye.
But first, to Joe's Kansas City Barbecue Burnt End of the Hour answer. What team has had the most players named NFL Defensive Player of the Year?
Ooh, no idea.
The Pittsburgh Steelers, who have had 8 by 7 different players. The next most is the Giants and Ravens, who have had 4 each. The Steelers have doubled up the next highest total. One of those players, Troy Polamalu, 43 today.
Wow, they are a great defensive club. There's no doubt about it. Giving away some wonderful Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Joe'sKC.com. Get it on your way home. It is the best barbecue in the world. Kansas City Barbecue Store's got you covered. If you want to grill out like a pro, the Kansas City BBQ Store.com to find them online. They're at 119th and Stringline, right across the parking lot from Joe's in Olathe. Everything. Sauces, rubs, utensils, know-how, the grills. They got it all, even the fuel. It's at the Kansas City Barbecue Store, 119th and Strangine. Leave you with this one today. The FAA and United Airlines are investigating an incident involving the Colorado Rockies during their charter flight from Denver to Toronto. Some videos were posted on social media by Rockies hitting coach Hensley Mullins, whose name is being thrown around. He's apparently sitting in the cockpit seat, and somehow this is Hensley Mullins' fault? Like, if you say to me on a flight, hey, do you want to sit in the cockpit seat? My answer is yes, I want to sit in the cockpit seat. I don't know why he's being thrown around. Yes, the pilots have been pulled off their flights. Yes, they're investigating it. I don't know how long the investigation will take since, you know, we have video of it. Quote, we're deeply disturbed by what we see in that video, which appears to show an unauthorized person in the flight deck at cruise altitude while the autopilot was engaged. As a clear violation of our safety and operational policies, we've reported the incident to the FAA and have withheld the pilots from service while we conduct an investigation. Thank you for getting into the investigation, but I got no rub with Hensley Mullins. If you let me sit in the cockpit seat, I'm going to sit there.